Intellectual Property 101 with Tushar.
Hello everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of Intellectual Property 101. I am Tushar Bhargav, your host and founder of Markaz, an intellectual property consultancy firm in India. In this episode, I have Mrs. Lakshika Joshi, who is Lead Counsel Global and AVP Legal at Ericent, to discuss ways to manage and monetize intellectual property. Hello, ma'am. Welcome to this podcast.
Let's start with the meaning of intellectual property and IP licensing. What is intellectual property and what is IP licensing?
Thank you, Tushar. I'm happy to be a part of this podcast. Any property which is created using your intellect actually is intellectual property. So you have an idea, that's your intellect. And the minute you put that into paper, that becomes your intellectual property. As humans, we realize that intellect isn't really a common thing. And hence, there would only be a few individuals who would create intellectual property. Therefore, the need to incentivize those creators and grant them exclusive rights over their creation for a limited period of time. Think of it like any other property, you know, a tangible property. In fact, in a landmark judgment of the U.S. Supreme Court, INS versus Associated Press, the concept of quasi-property rights was introduced and used in respect to intellectual property rights. To make it simple, think of it as property. Not all can afford to own property, as it requires huge investments. And those who do need those who do own it, they need the ability to protect it from trespass and any other forms of infringement. So intellectual property actually works pretty much the same way, whether ranging from copyrights to patents to trademarks. You create the intellectual property using a lot of resources, money, and energy, and therefore you also have the ability, as per the statutes, to protect it from infringers, to protect it from trespassers. So this is, in short, intellectual property. Intellectual property is then, it's very natural if you've spent a lot of money, energy, and resources creating it, you would like to have some kind of return on investment from that intellectual property. And that's where licensing comes in. So just like a property which can be rented, leased, let out, or, built upon, modified, or, made into something else, IP is also, and intellectual property also behaves pretty much the same manner. It is all, IP licensing, therefore, is almost akin to letting out your premises to another person for a specific purpose and time. You may grant rights to use your copyrights, trademarks, or patents for others to make use of it for a specific period and for lawful activities, that is, on mutually agreed terms. So an IP owner has these exclusive rights which can be commercially exploited, to gain benefit during a limited period of time. And this is what we call IP licensing, or intellectual property licensing in short. IP licensing happens typically when an IP owner and a person who desires to utilize the IP of that IP owner decide to come together and enter into a partnership or an agreement. So the IP owner becomes the licensor, and the party who is desirous of obtaining those rights becomes the licensee. And the IP that you're granting becomes your licensed IP. They enter into a contract for an agreed consideration. It could be a royalty, subscription amount, lump sum payments, or combinations thereof. And this becomes IP licensing.
So can we license any kind of intellectual property?
Theoretically, yes. All kinds of intellectual property can be licensed. Practically, though, it may be very difficult to administer and manage licensing of certain forms of IP, such as your trade secrets, know-how, and confidential information. And it is also important to note here that IP licensing can only be done if you have unencumbered rights over that IP. So once the owner is certain that the IP is fully completely owned by the IP owner, it is possible to license it.
So, ma'am, what are the different ways to license these intellectual properties?
So, there are various licensing models that are followed in the market. Licensing models, although, are typically very contractually driven. The parties may discuss and come to mutual agreement on the licensing model to best suit their objectives. So long as it's lawful, of course. And some common ones could be, where there is no transfer of ownership, which is licensing, typically, an IP licensing deal. This is also different from when IP is being assigned, which is almost akin to selling off your property to another person, and where the IP owner then becomes the assigner and the one who obtains or actually purchases or buys that IP becomes the assignee. So there is the typical licensing. It can be done through various methods such as, pure franchisee distribution agreements, or it is also done through creation of special purpose vehicles to exploit the IP created. Now, this may be done by organizations through establishing joint ventures with another organization that may have expertise in distribution, sales and marketing, or maybe bringing together another IP, which then clubbed with or combined with the original IP owner's IP works well for the market and can be exploited commercially. Or it could be an SPV created by spinning off into a separate entity. So many organizations also have, a mechanism where an IP can be transferred from larger company to a special purpose vehicle. This can be done through, again, licensing agreements or assignment of IP. And at times, the core IP is also developed by such special purpose vehicles. So, like I mentioned, IP can be licensed in various ways. Some common ways are, as I said earlier, franchisee agreements and distribution agreements. These typically happen when a bigger established brand joins hand with another company which may have its forte in distribution or is directly connected to the end consumers. And this bigger brand, which then becomes the franchisor, allows the franchisee to usually and franchisee usually puts in his own resources and money in order to make these goods and services available to the customers. So the franchisor allows the franchisee to use the franchisor's trademarks, their technology, and other forms of IP for the purpose of this agreement. The franchisee is required to, although adhere to all the standards of processes and quality as are laid by the franchisor. There are technology transfer agreements where the licensee will often need the intellectual property owner's support and a know-how about the IP which is being licensed. So most technology licenses will actually have a provision for initial handover or support period. And the support may come in many forms, such as support in terms of manpower, resources, time and material, etc. And this support may sometimes be limited to the startup period, or it may have an ongoing requirement that depends on the kind of IP that is being licensed. If it needs to be supported time and again, then you'll have a support maintenance agreement along with. So these are some common forms.
Like you mentioned, licensing agreement. Is there any specific thing that should be kept in mind while preparing licensing agreements?
Sure. So IP licensing is like an art. Each piece is different and unique, and there are some fundamental principles, but those only help you to provide a palette for sketching up a deal which actually will have shades and strokes and expressions that are more of the artist, which is your IP professional, than perhaps of anything else. So the first and foremost thing is to be clear of the objective of the IP licensing deal. The parties need to be clearly defining why they've come together to deal with each other. What are the basic things that underline the objective of the deal? And this needs to be put out into the licensing agreement. Once we have the objective, the scope becomes very clear. So the intellectual property being licensed must be defined very well. The licensee needs to carefully examine if IP is capable of independent functioning or will it require additional rights to be obtained? And sometimes these rights need to be obtained from third parties also, beyond the licensor. There may be certain prerequisites which the licensor must clearly list out for the IP to be licensed seamlessly and operate in the licensee's environment. Then we need to be very clear about the territory of license. And if there are any limitations with respect to the territory, those need to be explicitly provided for in the licensing agreement. Well, another big factor is exclusivity. So the parties have to clearly understand if it's an exclusive licensing deal or a non-exclusive one. And this is really critical because it'll have a huge impact on the consideration of the deal. The commercials will be negotiated basis the exclusivities being granted in the agreement. Well, then the most important that comes into picture is the rights that are being granted. They need a very close scrutiny. The rights need to be clear with respect to any limitations on usage, field of operation, lines of businesses, etc. And if distribution rights to third parties are also being granted, if sub-licensing rights are being granted, all of that needs to be covered within the rights section in the contracts. The IP owner must be always in a position to make certain warranties with respect to originality of the IP being non-infringing, unencumbered, etc. And this is something that the licensees have to be very, very careful about, because if the IP does not come with the warranties, it may be no good. Of course, consideration needs to be very clear, and we all know that without a valid consideration, any contract is no good. So the consideration has to be clearly spelled out. It needs to be in sync with the payment terms, such as the royalties, the fees for subscription, or any other amount that's agreed upon. The payment schedules have to be listed out, and they have to be mapped with if there are any milestones agreed between the parties. So for performance of services, there may be certain milestones and your payments may happen accordingly. And many times, you know, if there is any lapse or default in the payment schedule, that may have an impact on the entire licensing deal. Then the IP owner must retain the ability to periodically audit and examine the use of the licensed IP by the licensee. And this is very critical, especially in software licensing. We see that, you know, many times the software can be replicated, made copies of. Also in copyright licensing, when we license films and music, and that is what is required to be prevented. It's a good way to have an audit clause in the agreement in favor of the IP licensor, so that it can be checked from time to time. The liabilities that are agreed to be picked up by the parties have to be mentioned in the licensing deals, and there have to be provisions for indemnities for damages, if any. And actually, the parties can negotiate and agree upon if they would like to cap these indemnities or keep them uncapped, or they would like to do it in terms of uncapped for a few and capped for certain other kinds of indemnities. All that needs to be mutually agreed upon. So this is pretty much the kind of structure that one follows for IP licensing deals and the key things that one can look out for. But like I said earlier, ultimately, it is all an art, and you know, each deal is very different. The parties come together, spend a lot of time discussing with each other the kind of objectives they have in mind, and the scope of the deal will decide what would go into a licensing deal.
And is there any difference between IP licensing and IP assignment, or it's just like Celsius and Centigrade?
It's a huge difference. IP licensing is, like I said earlier, is like letting your house or property out to someone for a limited period of time on an agreed rental amount. An IP assignment is like selling it to someone else forever. So in short, that is the difference. If you ask me in terms of the structures they follow, the terms that they follow, again, there's a huge difference, because licensing gives you more control as an IP owner. you still are controlling your IP, you still own all rights over it, and therefore you would want to have things like audit and other clauses that give you and allow you to maintain that control. But in an assignment, you're actually for an agreed fees or agreed assignment amount, just selling it out to the purchaser. So, of course, the clauses and the structure will be very different.
So, ma'am, if you'll remember, a few years back, there was this case where Micromax approached Delhi High Court to prevent OnePlus from using Synogen software in India. All this happened because of the licensing agreements signed by Synogen with Micromax and OnePlus. So what should be kept in mind while licensing intellectual property to ensure that no such incidents happen?
That's a very interesting case. If you go into details, Micromax actually had signed a 3-year exclusive deal with Synogen for South Asia region somewhere in the middle of 2014. Whereas Synogen granted non-exclusive global rights to OnePlus. And OnePlus One was getting launched in India. When OnePlus One was getting launched, Micromax realized that they're also using the Synogen platform, which Micromax has exclusive rights to use in South Asia. And they approached the Delhi High Court for a restraining order with, the usual contentions that irreparable harm and injury will be caused. They've spent a lot of money obtaining exclusive rights from Synogen for South Asia and so on. And it's interesting to see that, this is actually a licensing deal with certain ambiguity with respect to the terms that actually landed both the companies in this situation. So perhaps Synogen didn't realize that through one of its distributors, non-exclusive global rights were available with OnePlus. However, they had also granted exclusive rights for South Asia region to Micromax. And the overlap caused this interesting case to, come up to the Delhi High Court. Of course, the matter was settled and, there wasn't too much that came up in the media after that. But we do realize that it's important when we enter into a licensing deal, therefore, is to do a due diligence of what you are in for. What is it that you're licensing? Has that been licensed before it is being licensed to you? If it's been licensed earlier, what are the constraints or limitations of that licensing? Does it cover exclusivities, non-exclusivities? Does it cover the entire globe? Does it have limitations with respect to usage on certain platforms or formats? And after you understand these nitty-gritties, I think it's easy to avert or to avoid the kind of situation we saw with the Micromax OnePlus thing reaching the Delhi High Court. So as I said earlier, the licensing deals and drafting licensing deals is almost an art, but there is a certain fundamental principle that you need to follow, which is, and which again takes me back to IP being something like a quasi-property. And therefore, if you were to invest substantial amounts of money licensing property, you would definitely do some due diligence around it. And this is all about doing some due diligence around what you're licensing. If you're spending money on it, you might as well understand if it is also owned by the person who's licensing it to you. And if that ownership is diluted by having given rights earlier to someone else, if it's diluted or it is restricted due to territorial limitations, all of that needs to be factored in, and then you need to construct your licensing deals.
Even though we spoke about so many advantages of licensing IP, but are there any disadvantages as well, or is it something that everyone must do?
I think it is something everyone must do. If you have an IP, you've spent a substantial amount of time, energy, money creating that IP. What would you do with it if you were not thinking of licensing it to anyone? Even if you're thinking it is a piece of music or lyrics that you wrote, and it was just your creative urge that led you to create that IP and nothing beyond it, perhaps no business was on your mind. But having said that, wouldn't you want to let the society then benefit from that piece of creative work that you've done? So the essential principle that underlines all IP statutes is that the creator or the inventor is granted exclusive rights over that IP for a limited period of time, which allows the creator to monetize it. So that there is more invention, there is more innovation, and hence IP actually spurs more IP, you know, and innovation, like, you know, innovation spurs innovation, creativity spurs creativity. So why would you want to hold your IP to yourself and not grant it to others? Even if you're not looking at a traditional IP licensing deal for money, you would still want to be a part of, say, an open source community or Creative Commons, where you would vent out once you vent out your creative urge, you would like to pool in your IP to let others take benefit of it and perhaps build on it to do better things. And this is the reason, you know, the IP licensing is the reason why we see the kind of products and services that we see today. If people were to just keep things to themselves, I don't think so we would have ever come this far.
Lately, Indian Performing Rights Society, or IPRS, has been involved in a lot of litigation. What is your opinion about the role played by IPRS in licensing copyright works?
IPRS plays a very critical role in terms of protecting rights of the copyright owners or the lyricists or the IP creators. And if you see, the intent of the Copyright Act is to be able to, and which is also reflected very well in the 2012 amendment that we saw, to be able to protect the rights of the original creators, to go down and to those slices where it is being originally created. We used to have instances where music companies or labels or even the film producers would, would actually, for an upfront amount, purchase all rights in composition and sound recordings from the creators, from the IP owners, and then make a huge amount of money when the film is successful or the music album runs, you know, or hits a certain number. But none of it would ever roll back or be given or distributed to the original lyricist or to the IP creators. And IPRS and societies like those across the globe actually help defend that for the lyricists and the creators. The societies collect royalties for and on behalf of the performing artists. And this is where their role becomes very critical, because many times the performing artist will not have the bandwidth or will not have the means to negotiate a deal in his or her favor with very large corporations. And IPRS as a body gives them the freedom to do it for and on their behalf as per the best industry standards available across the globe.
So is there any company which has benefited a lot by licensing their intellectual properties?
So if I were to ask you, what is common between Uber, Alibaba, and Airbnb? It is actually a very pertinent question, because if you think closely, all three of them are network orchestrators. They get people together to do business on their platform. And what is it that they have unique which makes them or distinguishes them in the market from many other similar players? It is their IP. So actually, all three of them are brand owners who've built upon their brands. They've brought... Uber doesn't own any taxis or cabs. Airbnb has the largest network of hotels and properties, but it doesn't own any of that, right? Alibaba, or for that matter, Amazon, Flipkart, they don't own what they sell. And none of them, all three of them, do not own what they are selling. So they don't have any products of their own. And yet they're biggest in the domain that they're operational. What actually makes them biggest? It's their brand name, which is their IP, which is just the trademark. So that is just an example of how IP has benefited some of the market leaders today. We've seen some very large IP deals in the industry in the recent years. There's been Sun Pharma and Ranbaxy deal, where Sun took over Ranbaxy in 2014. And a new entity was formed, which was the world's fifth largest specialty generic pharma company. So we see that a lot of acquisition towards IP-centric deals, which leads to market dominance, which leads to investments that actually are beneficial for the acquirer and both the company that is getting acquired. We've seen that Microsoft acquired LinkedIn in 2016 for a substantial sum of US$26 billion plus. And this has been a purely IP deal because it was just a natural fit for Microsoft to acquire LinkedIn. Microsoft was at that time trying to lay a lot of emphasis on its cloud services. LinkedIn allowed it B2B marketing, which was focused on business decision makers and so on. And of course, there were huge taxation benefits that people talk of for Microsoft taking on this through a loan and so on. Then we see that there's been the famous, acquisition of WhatsApp by Facebook, which at that point in time actually surprised many of the critics, and they thought that it is just being, overhyped because they didn't see too much value in it. But it was the IP that Facebook thought is important for WhatsApp. And these are just some examples of what IP has done in the recent years in terms of acquisitions or joint ventures or mergers between companies. And intellectual property has been the driving force or has been a very significant, critical, decisive force for these deals to actually come through. So we all know about Motorola being acquired by Google and then subsequent sale to Lenovo. But interestingly, if you see, when Google subsequently sold it to Lenovo, Google actually retained all the patents. Did not sell off the patents. It just sold off the mobile enterprise business, but it retained the patents. So if you see, technically, the value of that Motorola acquisition was in the patent portfolio that came along with the portfolio or the entire business of Motorola. And that's, those are some interesting deals that have been based on IP.
On internet, people talk a lot about trolls. But even in IP, there are trolls that people are scared of. What are these trolls? Are they here in India as well?
Well, IP trolls can be extremely scary. We've all heard of infamous patent trolls in the US. Of course, the Indian courts take a very strict view of that, and it's not something very common in India. But these are typically organizations or entities that are just waiting for you to use a piece of IP which perhaps these trolls would have hoarded or taken rights to.
I shouldn't say use because most of them are non-performing entities.
But these trolls hoard upon a lot of IP only for the purpose of litigating against any gullible companies or entities who would have inadvertently used a piece of what the trolls' licensors would own, so that the trolls can go out and sue the companies, the gullible companies, and make money out of it, either through settlements or through court orders, etc. So this is about patent trolls typically. But having said that, we see a lot of other kinds of IP trolling. It could be squatting on your domain name. So if you are a company, if you're already established brand and you decide to now open up a website or have a website with your company name or your product line, and you realize that the specific domain is not available to you. And why is it not available to you? Because someone else already has a similar name or already has that domain registered in his or her favor. And these are called actually typically squatters. These are people who register brand names or company names in their favor. simply so that when the company needs it legitimately, they can either go on to make money, negotiating, giving it back to the company for a huge amount of money. And so you know, they don't legitimately own that because they aren't doing any business with that trade name. But they want to squat on it. And that is what we see very often happening. And therefore, it's always a good idea if you have a business, you would. And in any case, we've come to a situation where nobody would think of a website subsequently. Most of the people launch their business and also launch their sites together. But if you're thinking of running a business without a site and perhaps follow it up with a website later on or a portal later on, you might want to check if you own the rights to that portal, or you even if you don't want to have a portal right away, it is suggested that you should actually block the domain names. You could always do the designing and come up with the portal and its content later on. But if you don't block that name now, you don't want to be victim of a situation where somebody else has actually encashed upon your brand name and taken that domain up.
So ma'am, last and final question. I have met a lot of entrepreneurs and family-run businesses who believe either IP registration and licensing is a waste of money or it is something that is only there for multi-million dollar corporations. Do you agree with this?
I don't at all. I do not agree with this question because it's interesting that when we think of IP, mostly we are thinking of multi-million dollar corporations because perhaps we are thinking of huge expenses with registrations, but that is not true for any other IP perhaps besides patents. So copyrights for that matter do not need to be registered also. But there's a way you can manage your IP around copyrights through contracts and through the agreements and licensing deals you do. There are ways to manage IP through non-disclosure agreements, confidential agreements, and that is something that smaller businesses are not taking enough cognizance of. You only realize that every business, as soon as they've thought of a name, will operate under that name, which becomes your trademark. And therefore, there is a need to protect your trademark. How else would you distinguish yourself from many other such products or services available in the market? And trademark registrations are not very expensive. And not even trademark. You can, you know, this is the digital era that we are living in. So you would definitely want to have a website for your product or services. The minute you think of a website, we are talking of domain names. You have to be able to reserve a domain name for yourself, lest you realize that your name is already taken up. And you cannot conduct business or open up a website in someone else's name. You need to reserve it for yourself. And therefore, the importance of thinking of IP at the right time. I think the right time would be the minute you're thinking of doing business. There is so much IP that we dabble with every day. In the morning when you get up and you shower and you pick up a toothpaste, the toothpaste has a brand name on it, which is a form of IP, which is a trademark. You move on and you consume breakfast. You may be consuming cereal for breakfast. The cereal is from a specific company, which is a brand name, which is a trademark again. The cereal has a certain recipe to it, which is again a trademark. It has certain things on its label. There are things, items written along with the MRP on the label. That is again copyright, which is IP. You move on and you open up a can of Coke or Pepsi and you drink it up along with your breakfast. That is IP because the recipe is protected. It is protected through trade secrets. That is a form of IP. And you move on to drive a vehicle to work. It comprises of various components. There are components that went into manufacturing that vehicle, which again have IP. They have IP in design. They could have patented product product-related parts which are incorporated into your vehicle, which is again a form of IP. You probably are using a GPS system, or your vehicle already has some kind of a system incorporated into the vehicle. That is again a form of IP, because there is a specific company that's using analytics over that GPS to give you that algorithm which will tell you what route to take, which is less of traffic and so on. And all that is form of IP. So there is no way IP will not touch you. So how is it that when you get on to do business, you cannot think of IP? In our day-to-day lives, we are thinking of IP. We are dealing, living, breathing IP.
Thank you so much, ma'am. This was really helpful. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Intellectual Property 101 with Tushar.
So this was Mrs. Lakshika Joshi talking about the ways to manage and monetize intellectual property. If this episode helped you in understanding the concept of intellectual property and its use, then please like this episode and subscribe to my channel for more informative episodes on intellectual property rights. In case you have any questions related to IP, patents, feel free to email me at tushar@markaz.in or use hashtag AskMarkaz on Twitter and Facebook. Thank you.